So today we're going to be talking again about concentration, right concentration. And I wanted to begin the talk with the thing that when I was looking up, I can't help but see my mind is like a puppy. I want to bring up the thing that when I was doing study and contemplation about this topic in preparation for speaking, the thing that really came out to me and almost felt like a revelation, even though, yeah, it felt like a revelation. It's that concentration amplifies what's going on. Okay, so I'm going to start by talking about what I mean there, and we'll kind of use it as a way to find our way into the rest of the talk. So if you come into meditation, whatever circumstances you come into meditation, a bit of concentration sort of naturally occurs, or we attempt it as we begin to meditate. And then what I mean by amplifying is that whatever is in us in that moment, whatever is just sort of the thing we carry into the meditation, when we concentrate, it gets bigger. If your conduct has been shaky, then the mind becomes even more restless. It can become self-justifying. For me, any sort of guilt about what I was doing or thinking or shame, even, those things can get bigger. Suppose I come into meditation without having clear intentions or with conflicted intentions. So if I don't have clear intentions, my thoughts can feel a lot like butterflies. I'm kind of all over the place in my meditation. Sharon Salzberg has this to say about it. The steadiness of concentration gives power to whatever intention is present. This is why intention and ethics are so central to practice. So you might have an intention that you don't even realize you have. Maybe you don't even have the intention to meditate. I have this sometimes. I'll be sitting, but really I'm like, I need to get this sit over with because I need to get on to this next thing. Right? And if that's really my intention to get on to the next thing, and I haven't clarified that and worked on it, then boy, does that amplify when I meditate. I feel super restless. Right? And if you have conflicting intentions, sometimes I have both the intention to sit and the intention to go and do the next thing. That can cause a lot of confusion, right? And that confusion amplifies as we get more concentrated. If my effort is aggressive, hard, rigid, then concentration magnifies that tension. If mindfulness hasn't been established, we're concentrating, but we're not mindful. We're not actually aware of the present moment. We're just getting very focused on one thing, maybe on the tip of the nose or whatever it is, without having acknowledged the present moment. Then concentration can amplify dullness. Without mindfulness, concentration can amplify dullness. So from Tibetan Buddhism, teacher Sokhmi Rinpoche says, meditation is like turning up the volume on your mind. If kindness is there, it gets louder. If neurosis is there, that gets louder. Ajahn Chah says this: when the mind is peaceful, whatever is there becomes very clear, very clear. If there is happiness, you know happiness. If there is suffering, you know suffering. Concentration does not make things good or bad. It makes them clear. So I mentioned amplifying what's there. Ajahn Chah puts this in a different way. He talks about clarifying what's there. Pretty similar, right? They're kind of different ways of talking about this. So I want to tell a story about a retreat. So when I read this, when I started reading about this in preparing for, it was like this aha moment because I started to remember things that have happened to me in practice and things that have happened to me in particular on retreat, and it made sense of them. And so I'll tell a brief story. Early in my practice of, in this lineage at least, my practice, I lived in DC and I went on a weekend retreat to a nearby retreat center. And, we went in for one check-in with the teachers. And I remember that all I had been feeling the whole weekend was this super intense guilt. And it was weird. It wasn't like I normally felt intense guilt in my life, but the guilt was about the fact. So I had my son was pretty young at that time, and he had entered a phase that was a little more difficult. And so my leaving on this, I was feeling really guilty about leaving on this retreat and kind of like not being there, with his mom, working through this thing with my son. And that, but the fact that it was just overwhelming, this feeling of guilt that I was working with through the retreat, it just felt a little weird. It felt like, okay, a little guilt. All right. I can imagine that, but it was just so intense. And only after reading this did I sort of go back to that memory and think, that's what was going on. My mind was becoming more concentrated on that retreat, and it was just amplifying what was already there. I probably had a little feeling of guilt that was somewhere in the back of my head at the beginning of the weekend, and boom, it just got huge. And if any of you, for those of you who've been on retreat, I'll bet you can kind of relate to this amplification, right? Like feelings get really big sometimes on retreats. Emotions get really big, and we can even see that we're getting big about something that like isn't that big of a deal. but it feels really, really big on retreat. And sometimes it can be puzzling, at least for me. Like, I'm supposed to, I'm here to be cultivating wisdom, and yet I'm getting more and more obsessed with the smaller and smaller things, right? Maybe this is what's going on. Maybe it's this amplification. Just hearing this, I feel a lot of relief. Oh, that's what's happening, right? That's what was going on. So let's put this in the context of right concentration. And the fact that this is the last thing discussed. This is the last thing discussed when we talk about the Noble Eightfold Path. Why is it at the end? Well, harmonious concentration, right concentration, whichever way you choose to view it. I like the word harmonious sometimes when I'm thinking about these, each of these aspects of the Eightfold Path. This is when all the previous factors are in harmony. So we have harmony in view, in intention, in speech, in action, in livelihood, in effort, and in mindfulness. So since concentration is amplifying all these other qualities, if these things are not in harmony, we can have a bumpy ride, right? Concentration can just be clarifying, as Ajahn Chah put it, all the things that are going on inside us that are not in harmony. And so right concentration, harmonious concentration comes at the end of the path because we become super sensitive to all the conditions that are in us. So if all of those previous factors are not in harmony, we will feel them. Conversely, if all those factors are in harmony, if we're really experiencing this harmonious version of concentration, if everything is aligned and then we become concentrated, concentration provides a deep stability to practice. And the clarity that comes from concentration. Wow, we can really see clearly when the water is still, right? Just imagine that. I mean, for me, I kind of have to imagine that because most of the time when I'm getting concentrated, I don't have all of the, I mean, most of the time, maybe all the time when I'm getting concentrated, I don't have all of those factors in alignment. And so I just get to see, the things that, the shameless actions of the mind, all the papancha, all of that comes up. But just imagine if you had a, if your mind was like a clear pond. Your ethics were in line. Your action, your speech, your livelihood, all your effort, all of these things were just aligned. And you were bringing clarity to a still pond. Just imagine what could happen. Just imagine the insights that can rise. Right? So that's the kind of concentration that's being referred to in this path. So Lindell mentioned another reason to have this concentration, a way that it supports the awakening that is discussed in the Noble Eight Path. She mentioned, actually, this is a quote. She mentioned this as something Steve Armstrong described. And Steve Armstrong described that insights, when when we're actually on the path and we're really, we're really kind of close, we're approaching the end. Insights can be so disruptive that you kind of freak out without the stability that concentration gives them. So what concentration provides when we have all these factors in mind is this stability, this really solid way that we can move through our experience. So that even, because insights, imagine this, imagine, you're seeing the clear pond with clarity, the still pond with clarity. And you're, all these things are coming to you, all these recognitions, all these ahas, right? That can itself knock you off if you aren't concentrated, if you don't have this one-pointed stability mind that's described by concentration. So that is right concentration, harmonious concentration. It's this description of a state that we can imagine, but probably for many of us, we rarely experience. Sometimes we might have moments of that, glimpses of that. We're sitting, we just happen to be sitting, and everything feels suddenly aligned. We don't have all those difficulties of mind, and we just experience this moment where we are concentrated, we are present, we are aware, and it feels effortless. Maybe you have some experience of having something like that. Maybe you're getting a little taste of what that right concentration feels like. But I want to note that we don't need that perfectly harmonious concentration to practice concentration. It doesn't mean that we only practice concentration when everything is perfect. The Buddha emphasized practice of concentration at all places on the path, not just at this sort of endpoint where everything's aligned. And I think it goes down to the reason that Ajahn Chah highlighted. Concentration provides clarity to what you're experiencing. So even if we're not there yet, we kind of want to see all the things that are going on. We get to understand the habits of our mind. We get to understand the things that we're working with. Maybe they were working on us in the background. You might have this feeling sometimes, oh, I had no idea I was sad. I had no idea I was feeling anger. You bring concentration. You get into a concentrated state of mind where you are receptive to what comes in the door, right? This is a relaxed sort of concentration, not a sort of, I'm focused on the tip of the nose. I'm focused on the tip of the nose, but something where we're receptive to what is, and we're able with whatever comes our way to kind of point, to go to it. To align with whatever is happening. That kind of concentration, it's kind of a relaxed form of concentration, provides clarity. And then we can see, oh, this is what's really inside. So, a story I want to tell related to that. I told a version of this story when I was talking about right effort, but this will be a different lens on it. I was on retreat in September. And the retreat began. This is at Spirit Rock, and as many of those retreats begin, there are a couple of days where we're just practicing a certain kind of concentration. We're practicing just noticing the breath. So the mind wanders, we bring it back to the breath. Mind wanders, we bring it back to the breath. That form, right? That kind of moving the mind to one object. And what was happening was I was getting very, very intense experiences of the hindrances. Okay, so for a couple of days, it was all fine. We were just focusing on the breath. And then when we were asked to kind of open things up a little, and not just focus on the breath, the hindrances just hit me like a hammer, like something like I have never experienced sensual desire and craving in the way that I have on this retreat. For, as soon as I sort of opened things up, oh my goodness. And then there was a talk about the hindrances. I think it was the very end of the second evening. And it was Tiwari giving that talk. And she talked about just abandoning the hindrances. And I realized that what I'd been doing was kind of, things that were arriving. Yes, I was noticing them, but I wasn't noticing them with this kind of relaxed grip. I was kind of grabbing onto them. And so when I noticed the sensual desire coming in, I was like, okay, I need to stay with this. I need to focus on this. I need to work with this. I had that kind of energy to it. And just hearing, the kind of obvious advice that, we hear over and over, that when we feel the hindrances, those are things that we need to let go of, right? We need to abandon, we need to let go of the restlessness, the sensual desire, the aversion, the torpor, whatever it is. We let it pass. We don't push it away, but we relax our grip on it so it can pass. Right? That really helped me align. And so on that same retreat, afterward, right, after I just learned to concentrate in this much more gentle way, not this grippy way, but this way where I just had a relaxed, curious attention. And I was able to put that attention on a sing at a single point. It became very stable, very peaceful. It took some time. I didn't immediately drop the hindrances. It took a while. But once I learned, oh yeah, I'm supposed to drop these, then I could really just have a relaxed grip. And it just helped me see, and I noticed that clarity. And I'll mention what the clarity felt like because it's very helpful to me. Okay, so I wasn't at some perfect right concentration, harmonious concentration point. There were all kinds of things that were still going on in my mind, but it was relatively stable concentration because I was relaxed into it. And what started to happen was I would just notice with clarity all the thoughts that came to my mind as they were coming. So I would notice, I would turn my head, 90 degrees from looking here to looking here. And I would see this person in the room. I would see the window. And when I'd see the window, I would notice, oh, it's sunny outside. Some desire to be outside in the sun. I don't get this in Seattle very often. I'm here in California on retreat. It's sunny. I should be outside. I would notice that thought start to come up. I would see people and I would see what they were doing. I'd see like, oh, I should adjust my posture. That person's posture, that looks like more supportive than what I'm doing. And then I would look at the door and I'd think, oh, there's the door. I go to that door when I need to use the restroom. And do I need to use the restroom right now? Maybe I need to use the restroom. And so I would just see these thoughts come up. But I kind of had access to them. I had a clarity of seeing them where I got to see them a little bit before they took over. I saw them at an earlier moment. And so they gave me a little space. With this clarity, I had a little bit of space to choose, right? I could think, oh, that thought, it's rising. I see it rising, but I don't need to grab onto it. I don't need to let it control me. Okay. I'm just going to let it come and I'm going to let it go. But I'm not going to let it control me and I'm not going to grab onto it either. And so that was an intense benefit to me in my practice. It gave me stability. And it gave me stability without my concentration being perfect, right? It's very clear from what I'm describing. I had all kinds of thoughts going on. I was not perfectly aligned, but I still had the benefit of concentration giving me a certain stability. And so I guess what I'm taking from that and what I hope you'll take from that is that even in very imperfect states, we can see concentration as a benefit. It can really help us. Okay. I want to mention one last thing. I was really hoping to lead a short practice. I don't know if I'm going to have time to do that, given that I should probably also leave some room for discussion. But let's see. I want to give at least a few pieces of advice that I have learned very recently for cultivating concentration in meditation, because I was doing it in a very, very different way. Prior to the second half of this year. So this is all very new to me. I'm very much a student of what I'm about to tell you, not an expert. But the advice I got does come from experts, people who I'm so I'm just passing on what other people have told me and what I found out. One is something that Philip Moffitt discusses. So Philip Moffitt has a website called Dharma Ground. And in it, he describes something called naturally arising practice. And he begins this naturally arising practice with a very specific arriving sequence. And there are three A's, okay, for those of you who like these sorts of mnemonics. They are arrive, become available, and then align. And oh my goodness, have I found this advice helpful. So when I arrive into practice, when I'm doing an arriving sequence, I do it with these three things in mind. So arrive, what do we mean there? We're talking about coming into the here and now, right? Wherever your mind has been, wherever you've physically been, whatever you've been doing, whatever you're about to do, okay? We leave all that behind. We come into this moment, right? That's the arriving. Second A is available, becoming available, right? After I spend some time noticing what it is to arrive, right? Noticing where my body actually is, where my heart actually is, where my mind actually is. It's a quality. It's a little bit of a quality I'm cultivating. It's availability, receptivity, openness, okay? Softening, softening. Okay, what all is here? If I soften into this experience, if I become porous, then I really get to feel into the moment much more deeply. You know, things that I didn't recognize were there, start to come in. And then the third A is align. Okay. This is aligning with your intentions and values. And if you need reasons for doing this, they were all the things I talked about at the beginning of this, right? Concentration, becoming focused, as we do in meditation, causes a magnification of whatever's there, right? It brings out whatever intentions and values we have. So if we take a moment to align with our intentions and values, we will have a much more stable experience with meditation instead of wrestling with all the magnified confusion, the magnified conflicting intentions that we had when we began to sat. We take this moment to intentionally align all of this. And then when we become a little more concentrated, we will experience a much more stable meditation. Right? So some advice on aligning, that this comes from Philip Moffitt as well, that I found very helpful is don't pick something to align with that is super conceptual. You know, like, oh, like, you know, you could align with, like, one of his pieces of advice is if these things are felt for you, you could align with the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, right? If you have a felt sense of what it means to align with the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, by all means do that. For me, when I hear the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, I go into conceptual. I'm like, oh yeah, this is what is meant by the Buddha in that context. This is what is meant by the Sangha. This is what is meant by the Dhamma. That's not helpful. Instead, things that are very tangible and easily felt are helpful to me. But I'm speaking very personal. So the things I tend to align with are kindness and clarity. Those words have an immediate resonance for me. If I try to align with kindness and clarity, I can feel that. I feel what it's like. I can feel the shift in myself. And then, you know, sometimes also with my intention, why am I here? Oh, I'm here to take a moment to see clearly. I'm here to practice in this cloistered setting of meditation so that I can bring that seeing clearly to the rest of my life. I can feel that. If that's not something felt for you, pick something that's felt for you. Once I feel that intention, I just automatically start aligning. And by the way, I have to go back to available and to arrive after doing all of that. You know, I might start by trying to arrive, starting to become available, and then starting to align. But I need to go back and forth between those three many times. When I really do this, when I really follow that practice, the output, I am left in a place that is described by presence and discernment. I'm a little bit more available for whatever comes. I'm in a place where I'm less likely to be looking for an experience or expecting an experience. And from there, this is the last bit. Only once I feel like that, okay, I let concentration arise naturally. This is again his practice. This is a Philip Moffitt practice. Concentration arising naturally out of curiosity. It's a very gentle way of becoming one point. This isn't a furrowed brow, trying to concentrate kind of practice. This is like I mentioned during the meditation, it's like subtly shifting the focus on a camera lens. So all of this is present, this body in this moment, this mind in this moment, this heart in this moment. I'm not throwing that away or pushing it aside. It's like I'm just glancing in a particular direction. So if I want to at that moment become concentrated on the breath, because that's my chosen object of meditation, rather than going, breath, now, I go, huh, breath. Oh, that's also part of this present moment. What's going on with the breath? Let me just change my glance very slightly toward the breath. And I let that be a process. I let it happen slowly. And then I sort of go to the breath. I'm not saying this happens every time, but I'm kind of giving you the description of what happens when it's all working right. I wish I had time to practice, but it is 11. And I think it's more important that we have time for discussion in small groups and as a big group afterward. But this is a practice, so I don't need to guide this with you. One thing I want to show you, I'm going to put a link in the chat. Here, let me do that. I feel like that is time worth spending. Time worth spending. Okay, so I put a link in there. That you can click. This is Philip Moffitt's website, and he taught the web page is the overview of the naturally arising practice method. He talks about this practice method, and he also has a link to the arriving sequence that I mentioned about arriving, becoming available in life. I hope it's useful to you. I found it incredibly useful in my own practice. Thank you for sitting with me. Goodness, it's funny how 30 minutes can pass. At least for me. When I'm in the audience, it's a different experience. So at this moment, we're going to split into smaller groups of three or four people. And I'd encourage you to discuss anything that's come up for you in this practice. What's your own experience with concentration? The word can mean many things. It can be confusing. It can refer to many people of this sort of rigid holding. Many of you may have experience with the kind of softer form of concentration that I mentioned, right? What has come up for you? Do you feel this magnification when you get concentrated? So it's your time to discuss any of that in a group. So I'll pause for a moment so that anyone who does need to leave can leave. Yeah. But I'd encourage you to stay. This is a time when we can kind of refine our understanding through discussion. We need Sangha. This is one of those uses of Sangha to help us understand better. So we have a few minutes now for an open group discussion, a full group discussion. And I would invite you to just raise your hand. We can there's a function at the bottom that says raise hand. Sometimes it's hidden underneath something that says react, sometimes not. Anything that came up, anything you want to discuss. I will note also anything that was said to you in the confidence of the group from another person, to keep that in the group. To keep that in the group. Yeah, go ahead, Lendl.
Thanks for your talk, Arv. I really appreciated it. And this theme about how concentration can bring intensity. That was really interesting to me, and it's something that I know Philip Moffat in his retreat, this last retreat he just had, he talked about that a little bit too. You know, how when the concentration, you know, just sort of naturally gets a little bit stronger and the mind is, you know, fairly steady, that whatever comes up in the mind, you know, like a memory or mental images or whatever it is, can seem really, really intense, much more intense and compelling than it might normally seem, because we're able to see it more clearly. And he was talking about how sometimes that's really helpful, that something is coming up that we haven't really even known was there, and we get to see it as it really is. Other times it may be something that just isn't so onward leading, but it comes up and we just get, because it's so intense, we just go onto it in a way that isn't that helpful. And I know that I've experienced that when I've been on retreat at this certain point, you know, and there are times when I get caught up, when I really need to kind of develop a little more equanimity and relaxation, and yet it kind of feels like strong practice because my mind is right there on that thing. So it's really interesting, you know.
Yeah,
really interesting.
I really like what you said at the end.
It's challenging.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I really like what you said at the end about how it can seem like this is a really good practice. I'm intensely feeling something, right? Is that what you meant by it? Like, because,
yes.
That is, I can relate to that. I think that until I heard these words about the amplification and heard that the message there is you really need to align, right? Like, you really need to cultivate those first seven factors to really be aligned in order to not have this kind of swinging back and forth chaos, and to really have the clarity and the amplification, these virtuous factors, you know. I think I was really confused. I experienced a lot of confusion around this before, and I would try to do that, you know, I would think, well, here I am feeling this big feeling. This is great. This is my mindfulness practice right now. I'm just going to steep in this feeling, you know? And really, I wasn't really doing a favor to myself. And if I had aligned, if I'd taken a moment to align, you know, and abandon the things that are, you know, not in alignment, I think my practice would have benefited. And so that's the, it all came from that amplification message from that. That was the aha.
And in a sense, it is good because the concentration is there.
Yeah.
And the paying attention is there.
Yeah.
It's just kind of out of balance.
Right. Yeah, it's a good point. It is there. And it's why it's helpful to concentrate even in these imperfect states, because you do get to see them.
Get to see them. And if you have the equanimity, it's great. If you don't, well, you kind of go off, but then you get back. So
that's a really good way of putting it, bringing the word equanimity.
But thanks. That was really good for me. Something I've been working with too.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for your offering too. You've given me something to think about with equanimity. Yeah. Nina.
I'm kind of talking about the same line, but I think we, Sherry and I talked about when we're sitting down to begin meditation and concentration, there's not only always a single object there. I don't know, I could sit down and with the intention of just meditating and seeing what comes up. And it, as Lyndall said, depending on there's a certain emotion that's happening or something that's been on my mind, but sometimes there's not. And I found I could still go through the path of insight with in that way. So, yeah.
Yeah, you're bringing up something really important that I should probably clarify. I should have clarified when I spoke. So first of all, the kind of sequence I mentioned at the end and the advice for, you know, it was really advice for cultivating concentration in meditation, not like always meditate like this, right? I think the arriving sequence that Philip Moffitt mentioned, I find that universally helpful. That arriving, becoming available and aligning, that kind of sets me up, you know, for whatever, that sets up my mindfulness. It sets me up into a calm, clear state. But then the next thing I mentioned, which is sort of letting concentration arise naturally, that is if you're trying to cultivate concentration, right? Mm-hmm. And as you're pointing out, we're not always trying to cultivate concentration. I would say, in fact, that most of the time I have practiced, most of my time, I'm very bad at concentration. Mm-hmm. I have, for most of the time I've been meditating, I'm doing what you're saying. You know, I'm just letting things arise. I'm just being available and mindful without any particular ability to be single-pointed, right? And without emphasizing single-pointedness, that concentration. These days, because I've focused the other way, maybe the pendulum was so far on that side, I'm finding it quite helpful to cultivate concentration, to cultivate single-pointedness for that stability, for that clarity that it can provide to the object that you choose to become single-pointed on, right? But you're absolutely right. That is not always what we're doing in practice. It may not even be the main thing we're doing in practice. It's not considered... Concentration is not considered the direct path to enlightenment. Right? It's more like a tool, you know, that we can use as opposed to something that must absolutely be a part of practice. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that to light. Lillian and Nikhil, either or both.
Something I appreciated about your talk was kind of, I think what others have pointed to, but like talking about how concentration can come, there can be this ease with concentration that can arise. It doesn't have to be, it's not really this thing that you can buckle down and do. And it feels a little similar to me to also how I've been trying to think about right effort, where kind of like on its surface, it feels like right effort's very much like, oh, I need to do this thing. Like there's this thing, I had this intention, I need to do this intention. And more so, I think for me, right now it feels almost more like right effort really feels more like I have this intention towards awareness. And then from awareness stem these natural reasons to do something or the other. And I may have an intention that then through awareness, I realize actually maybe that's not even the path I want to go down, or maybe it is. And if it is, that awareness helps me meet that intention. It's not something I can just buckle down and try to do. And it feels a little similar with concentration, where something I was sharing in the small groups was that, you know, during these, like so often during Dharma talks, I want to be paying attention to what is in the talk, and then my mind goes somewhere completely else, and then I notice it's somewhere else, and I'm really annoyed because I missed a bunch of the talk, and I'm like, drat. So that's something I've been trying to do this month is I use the talks themselves as an opportunity for kind of concentration and try to just bring this, kind of like you mentioned, you know, sometimes concentration just naturally arises out of interest, and just cultivate that interest because there is this genuine interest in the talk, right? So trying to cultivate that genuine interest and, you know, you have that naturally lead to concentration. And when I notice that my mind is wandering, coming back to something that Nana had mentioned in one of his talks a couple of months ago about just celebrating a return to awareness, you know, like our minds naturally wander, and try to just find when I notice my mind is wandering, instead of the kind of the natural path or the usual path is kind of like, I'm annoyed that, you know, frustration, annoyance, stuff like that. Try to notice that, but then also try to cultivate the gratitude for the fact that I have this practice and then there's this return to awareness, because gratitude does exist. And it's almost just like finding where is that, and then try to build that pattern, kind of like repeat that. So, Yeah, I think this whole month and your talk have just been they've been really helpful in that regard.
Yeah, I am right there with you. With right effort and this being they're very similar to me. And I spent so much sort of, you know, struggle effort, struggle concentration, so much time on that. And now I'm trying to do exactly what you said, you know, also. How has it worked for you to try that and try that during talks?
Yeah, I think it's been really helpful. My mind definitely still wanders, but I think it's been so helpful. Because sometimes what happens is when my mind wanders, and then it wanders in a different direction because it's frustrated at itself for having wandered, and then it's going off in this other direction of like frustration, and then it's still not actually where, you know, my intention would be for, you know, where I would like it to be. And so I think it's been helpful just kind of finding that ease, to find the ease with the concentration, and then having it be easier to then cultivate that to maintain that interest, because it's not being, you know, it's not constantly being sidetracked.
Yeah. Well, cool. I'll be curious to see how that goes for you. It's something I'm also trying. I find it a much more pleasant way of practicing.
Right.
You know, it actually makes the mind more content, and then you get all the advantages of a contented mind.
Right. I think something that Tim mentioned, it might have been during the intro to meditation series or something, I can't remember when, but he said something about how we do this to be happy. And I think so often, like, it can become sometimes like easy to forget that and just like get really frustrated and down on yourself. And
it's so true.
Just like helping to remember. The whole point is to try to find ease. It's like to try to be a little happier.
It's funny we need to be reminded of that, but it is true, isn't it? Yeah. I apologize, Sherry. I want to continue with the announcements, but I'm happy to receive an email and I also need, I should leave relatively. Is that okay? Okay, thank you very much. I'm happy to receive an email or to do it at another time. I want to say a few things before we leave, and I also want to respect your time by not being too terribly late. One is I want to mention a few upcoming events. First is we have a whole new year coming up in front of us. And the theme for that year, in case you haven't heard, is Transcendental Dependent Origination. So we've done dependent origination before, and that was more a description of all the things that can get in the way. Transcendental dependent origination, the possibility of awakening through dependent origination. So this is kind of the more hopeful side. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm excited about this next year. Well, let's end with an offering of metta. Yeah, shall we? I'm going to turn my volume settings back so you can hear a bell at the end. May we awaken to the truth. May we free ourselves from unnecessary suffering. May all beings awaken to the truth. May all beings be free of suffering.
Be well.